the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. You know, I love to read biographies and autobiographies of people in the entertainment industry. The first one of these that I ever read was way back when I was at Bancroft Junior High School, and it was called Harpo Speaks, the autobiography of Harpo Marx, written with Roland Barber. I loved Harpo Speaks so much that it remains my all-time favorite book to this day. In it, Harpo tells the story of his life and his career as one of the Marx brothers, and of his friendships with the renowned intellectuals of the Roaring Twenties who hung out in the Algonquin Hotel. Harpo also speaks lovingly of his wife, the actress Susan Fleming, and of their four adopted children, Bill, Alex, Jimmy, and Minnie. Now, Harpo Marx's adopted son, Bill Marx, has written his own wonderful book, and it's called, naturally, Son of Harpo Speaks. In it, Bill Marx talks of his famous father and his famous uncles, and of the many people and events that shaped his life. It's also a very funny book, so I am thrilled to say, Bill Marx, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
How do you do? I'm happy to be here, and I'm still happy to be here on the planet.
Harpo Marx, I think, was one movie star who could walk the streets and never be recognized, since in real life he looked very little like his character. When do you remember becoming aware that your father was famous?
I don't think I ever realized it in a way that I felt it was important enough to embrace until maybe I was about 50 years old. I have to tell you that Dad, without the wig and without the the horn and without the coat and all of that, you would never recognize him. That is really a wonderful thing, to be able to go through life like that. The downside is nobody would ever recognize him. Also, so
he couldn't get a good seat at a restaurant like Rock Hudson could or whatever.
Yeah, right. Okay. Come on. Yeah, you want to give me you're telling me you're Harpo Marx and you want a good seat? Oh, come on. No, I tell you, I was never much of a Marxophile. I had a wonderful relationship with my dad, as well as a professional wonderful relationship. And I know he was famous, but I never really, celebrity is something that is in other people's eyes. And I just knew him as Dad. And he went to work in a different outfit than your three-piecers do. And so I saw him in a different way, I guess. I guess we all, I love when people say, "Who is your dad?" And I said, "Dad, my dad is Harpo Marx." And they say, "Oh, is he still alive?" And I say, "No, but he's still my dad." And we all have dads and we all have moms, and they still are ours, no matter what, no matter how old, no matter whether they passed away. And Dad's passed away since 1964, so I've had a lot of time to reflect upon some of the things I never thought about when he was telling me when I was a kid. And they all come to surface later on in life, if we allow them to, and I've probably benefited more from his mentorship in my doddering times than I did when I was fortunate enough to be a part of his world.
Well, he speaks to you in your book. Does he literally speak to you in your life?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, he was a very calming influence. I really don't want to deitize the guy, but he died without an enemy, and he was just the most wonderful man. He saw through his own eyes a way to live this life that we didn't ask to have in the first place, and but we were stuck with it, and so he went with it, and he really understood himself very, very well. And I think that's the greatest gift he gave me, was to stand back and just try to accept who you are and what you're all about, and live by what you want without hurting others, while your pursuit, the old brass ring is available. And I don't want to get philosophical, because he wasn't really a philosophical guy. He just lived that philosophy.
Well, he does seem, and of course I'm judging from the books that I've read, including Harpo Speaks and Groucho and Me and other books, you know, his personality is very different than that of Chico or Groucho. You know, Groucho seems maybe more angst-ridden. I mean, Groucho maybe was unhappy that he wasn't more. He wanted to be a writer. He wanted to be other things than he was. Harpo seems a lot more content.
I feel like I ought to interview you. You sure got it right.
Is that about how it was?
Oh, you have it right. Yeah, each brother had its own distinct personality, and they acted on it, and they were very fortunate. My dad would tell you that he was so lucky to have four other brothers to help fight his fights for him. They had a bond that lasted throughout their entire lifetime, but each one of them was peculiar in their own way. Chico was nothing like Harpo, who was nothing like Groucho, who was nothing like Gummo, who was nothing like Zeppo. And you can intersperse either one, any of those, with anyone else, and they were all very distinctive in their own way they went about living life. I would have to say that probably the most calming influence, other than my dad, was probably Gummo. Gummo had a nice kind of easy manner about him, and he was very, very easygoing in the way he spoke to people, and he didn't get overly emotional and all of that, whereas Groucho was, as you could tell, quite differently. Zeppo, of course, was a ready to explode at any time.
He was an angry guy, Zeppo, or he was
I would have to say that he was a powder keg emotionally. He was a wonderful guy in many ways, but his whole concept of life was not to win. It was to beat the crap out of the other guy, you know? I don't mean that necessarily physically. I just mean that in any endeavor that he had. He was a big gambler. Whereas Chico wanted to win, Zeppo really wanted to beat the hell out of you, you know? I mean, he just had this kind of inner aggression, and I'm pretty convinced that it came from the fact that he was born 17 years after Chico, who was the eldest, and there was a 10 or 11-year period where he had to live alone while the boys were out starting into vaudeville. And so he didn't have the same experiences they had. And so he was almost an only child and had to fend for himself. And I think a lot of that manifested itself later on in life, where he was a pretty tough guy. He really was.
Was he disappointed in his own part in the Marx Brothers? I mean, he never really kind of comes across in the five Paramount films that he's in, and then of course he doesn't appear in any more of the films. What was he more of the act than we really could see in the movies, or is that how he was on stage?
Well, yeah, he took over for Gummo when Gummo quit. Gummo wasn't particularly fond of show business, and so then Zeppo took his place. I don't want to paint a bad picture of Zeppo. Zeppo was all kinds of things, but perhaps the funniest of all of the Marx Brothers in private life.
Really? He was a joker?
He was an amazing raconteur, and the only person in the world that ever could make Groucho actually pitch over with laughter.
Zeppo.
He was a great storyteller and he's a dialectician. And whenever Groucho was sick, Zeppo took over as Groucho.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that. So, like, when they were on stage doing Alsatias or the Coconuts or Animal Crackers, I was thinking, how could they ever have an understudy if one of them fell ill? But you're saying Zeppo could he play Chico or Harpo, too?
No, I don't know about that myself. I've I've never really truly explored that. I don't think they had studies at that time, although they should have, for the three Broadway shows that they were in. I'll Say She Is, The Coconuts, and Animal Crackers, as you referred to. But I believe that because Chico and Harpo looked a great deal alike in private life, they probably could assume roles. If it was a strictly a play where they learned their lines and all of that.
Yeah.
But I never heard of any understudies other than Zeppo.
No,
I know from my cousin Maxine, who is Chico's daughter, that occasionally they would take each other's parts on the stage, and Chico would do Harpo, and Harpo would do Chico, and Zeppo would do Groucho, and Groucho would do Zeppo.
Just to keep it interesting.
That on occasion. What?
Just to keep it interesting.
Thank you. Just to keep it fresh, keep it interesting. And my cousin Maxine, who was a trunk baby and watched them for many, many years through vaudeville and Broadway, she was the one that related that information to me. And so it is true that they didn't just goof around, they really goofed around.
Yes, in Harpo Speaks, one of my favorite stories is when Harpo talks about how he and Chico tried to sell money to a policeman at a discount.
How do you sell money to a policeman at a discount?
Well, they stopped the cop on the street and they said, you know, we'll sell you a dollar for 90 cents. And we'll sell you a $2 bill for $1.70.
That's kind of like Groucho saying, what this country needs is a good 5-cent nickel.
I never met your father, but I did meet Groucho once on the street. I stopped him. He was walking on Santa Monica Boulevard, and I caught up to him, and I said, Mr. Marx, I hate to bother you while you're on your walk, but I've wanted to meet you all my life. And he said, I don't blame you.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. He was always there with something, and you never knew what it was going to be. For the most part, he was a pretty funny guy. Occasionally, when he wasn't, and that was rarely, he would push a little too hard to try and become funny.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his only kind of downfall there.
Well, your father, Harpo Marx, was the luckiest in love of the brothers.
He indeed was the luckiest in love. Married Susan Fleming, a contract player for Columbia Warners, and
we know her. She was Jack Oakey's romantic interest in Million Dollar Legs.
Yeah. Million Dollar Legs was originally written for the Marx Brothers when they first came out to the coast to make their first Hollywood movie. And they rejected the script.
Hmm.
It was written by Herman Mankiewicz, and they decided to go a different direction, and they made Monkey Business. Incidentally, next year it will be the 80th anniversary of their first Hollywood motion picture, Monkey Business.
Wow.
Can you imagine 80 years ago, and they're still going strong? He met Susan on the set of Paramount while they were doing their movie, and Susan was doing Million Dollar Legs, and they both started dating, and it really only took my mother about 4 years to marry him. She chased after him like he chased after blondes. But what happened was that he was a confirmed bachelor, and he was smart enough to stay single for 48 years, whereas the brothers had already gone through a couple of marriages that were quite failed. And Dad, finally, when he found the right one, he succumbed and was a very, very happy man that he did for the rest of his life, until he passed away curiously enough, on their 28th wedding anniversary on the 28th of September in 1964. They had a great life together. And I must say it was largely due to Susan's ability to kind of make him malleable to family, to convince him that that was the right way to go at his age and come back to feeling the roots of family when he grew up in Manhattan in his early years. And for that, he was just the happiest man in the entire world.
It did mean for him giving up his friendships in New York to a certain extent.
I'm sorry, about New York?
Yeah, I'm saying, did his marriage mean that for him he was giving up some of his friendships in New York and running around with those people? Or had that sort of come to an end already anyway? You know, the round table crowd.
Yeah, the round table crowd, he gave up all of that, but so did the brothers. They made a decision that right after the stock market crash of 29, they were going to go out to a burgeoning little industry called motion pictures in Hollywood because they wanted to make some money. And they had finished their run of Animal Crackers, and they weren't too sure what was going to happen after that. And they had the opportunity, because they had already filmed two of their Broadway shows with Paramount. Paramount offered them to come out and do three more pictures for them if they would come to Hollywood. And at that time, that's where the money was. So, with great reluctance, as far as my dad was concerned, because he was one of the members of the Algonquin Round Table, his closest friend at that time was Alexander Wolcott, the great New York playwright, critic, and a dear friend of Dad's, and croquet partner. Did you know that Dad is in the Croquet Hall of Fame?
I didn't know there was a Croquet Hall of Fame.
Neither did I until I found out that Dad was in the Croquet of Hall of Fame. Well, you know, I know if you listen to this program long enough, you'll learn something, right, Gary?
Finally. we're speaking with Bill Marx, and he's the son of Harpo Marx, and his book is called Son of Harpo Speaks. You were also Harpo's musical director.
At the age of 16, I was already his musical director. They knew I was a musician or going to be one when I was 2 years old. Go ahead, Bill. You know, I wrote a book called Son of Harpo Speaks, as you mentioned before. And it's two stories. It's one of my relationship, both professionally and as a son, with my dad. And at the same time, there's a whole other story that unfolds because I am an adopted person, and I was already somebody before they met me and brought me home and created a wonderful life for me. And I, at the age of two, when I first came home with them, we had a little thing in the living room called the Victrola. And they were able to record things and play things, play acetate records and all of that. And recently, I just finished my audio version of Son of Harpo Speaks. It's out in the ether there now somewhere, MP3 or whatever they call it, at Amazon and Bear Manor Audio. And what happened is in my book, I actually have a recording of me singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game when I was 2 years old. So my folks knew I had some musical talent, and I ultimately tried a lot of different things in my life, but I always came back to music. And as a result, I was Dad's arranger conductor by the time I was 16 years old, and I just spent the next 12 years working with him and doing albums and going on the road with him and seeing an icon work.
You know, I happen to have Harpo at work, the LP right here. I don't know if you can hear this, but I'm going to just put this on for a second.
Yeah.
Tell me if you can hear this. Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah. My Blue Heaven.
And you have a picture in your book of the chart that you wrote for this track.
Well, incidentally, that's a piece that Dad and I played when we had the great honor and privilege of being on a show called Person to Person with Edward R. Murrow, where they came to Dad's house in Palm Springs and did a 20-minute segment on Harpo and his family. And My Blue Heaven was the song that we played, introducing the fact that we had a new album out on Mercury Records, and here it is.
Now, I have the record right here in my hand, Mr. Marks, and I noticed that you don't get any credit whatsoever anywhere on this record. Did that bother you?
I didn't need it. those things, you know, matter as you get older. I think we don't want it to slip away, so we want to see it somewhere, you know?
What do you remember about the recording session?
Oh, well, I remember one particular situation where I had he was having a lot of trouble with the rhythm to the melody of his pal's song, Thinking of You. His pal was Harry Ruby, Calmer and Ruby. They also wrote Three Little Words and Nevertheless, all these old songs that maybe some of you people might remember and probably not.
Maybe I'm right and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm weak and
yeah,
maybe
hey, all right.
Three Little Words, oh, what I give for that wonderful thing. I know this
Yeah,
song.
That was Calmer and Ruby. Well, he wrote a song called Thinking of You, and he was having trouble with the rhythm of the melody, and the only way he could get it, he had an idea. He says, Bill, lie down on the floor and let me look through the strings, and I want you to conduct me. Whenever the melody changes, the notes change, I want you to conduct me in the rhythm that it's supposed to be. Well, there I am, lying like a capsized turtle, doing this, and we got the take. It was terrific. You know, and he was working with a 6-7-piece band, too, while it was all going on. Of course, those guys were all in convulsions. And I just appeared to be convulsive there, but that I remember very, very, very well.
Well, we're talking with Bill Marks, and he's the author of Son of Harpo Speaks, which is also available in an incredibly lovingly produced audio version, as Mr. Marks was just telling us. You really went all out with the audio version of Son of Harpo Speaks. You've got little clips of Harpo performing and so forth. It's fantastic.
Well, I should tell you about the audio version.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, it's 9.5 hours. I had a lot to say. See, when you didn't have the pictures in the book that I have, I had to figure something else out. So I have rare recordings, and some of them that last 15, 20 minutes, you know, of stuff that nobody's ever heard before, this fascinating stuff. It's historical, you know, actually, and that's what made the book a whole lot longer, even though the text is basically the same. I've added a few stories, but it came as quite a surprise to me that it was 9.5 hours. I narrate the whole thing, and I also do all the voices, including dad's voice, and I do a very good intimation of his voice. I'm very close the way I did it.
Well, of course, it's the one thing we don't know, because we've never heard his voice. But give us a sample of your dad's voice. Could you do that?
Well, I don't think I can right now. I have to get in the mood, Bill. You know, first of all, you have to be able to know. He had a very low daddy voice, you know. And so,
In your book, Son of Marpo Speaks, you paint a beautiful picture of you and your father and your uncles at the Gilmore Field, which was the ballpark where now CBS Television City is.
Dad was a huge baseball fan. My mom was born in Brooklyn, so she was a Dodger fan, and Dad was born in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, so he was a Giant fan, or a Gent fan. And when they moved out to the coast, both of them, to pursue careers in acting, they left their ball teams behind. And so all we had out here was the Pacific Coast League, which was a very, very good AAA league. And they had a thing called an eight-team league with teams like the Hollywood Stars and the Los Angeles Angels. And Dad got a box seat every single year at Gilmore Field, and we must have spent two or three days out of the week whenever the Stars were in town, and they would play 6-7 game series at that time. They didn't just play two or three games and then have somebody else come in. So we really got to know the players, and we were up real close, and it was almost like a family, all the people that worked and played for the Hollywood Stars. And the fella right behind our box was a guy by the name of Bob Cobb, who happened to own the Hollywood Stars. And in case you ever are in the need, think of something to eat, maybe, and you can't think of what you might want to eat, think of the Cobb salad, because he invented it. He also owned a place called the Brown Derby Restaurant, which was a very famous kind of a Hollywood place where you would go and enjoy your dinner. And they had two or three places all throughout Hollywood and Beverly Hills and so forth. And so everybody went to the ballpark. All the guys that loved baseball from back east, ex-vaudevillians, you know, Burl and Jessel and Benny, and they all showed up. They all had box seats, and they had the greatest time there. It kind of made them feel like they were back east and still rooting for a team, you know. So it was just a remarkable time in my life. Unfortunately, baseball is not like that anymore. It's my favorite sport of all, but I must say that the game has changed, especially with free agency, and on top of that, it's hard for me to root for anybody anymore, because all of a sudden they show up on another team the next year, you know,
or even in the middle of the year.
Yeah, or in the middle of the year. And it's really, I know it's all about the money, but it's still in all, it wasn't playing the game as I remember. Everybody swings for the fences now. There's no such thing as a bunt or a sacrifice or move the runners over or, you know, a steal base. It's a different game. It's a three-run homer, you know, that kind of thing. And it's not as exciting to me as it once was, but it's still, if there's a ball game on, I'll watch it. I don't care what. It's still a beautiful, beautiful game to watch.
Well, we're speaking with Bill Marx, and he is the son of Harpo Marx, and his book is called Son of Harpo Speaks, and it feels like we're just getting started, but we've come to the end of our program. And Mr. Marx, I want to thank you so much, and I know people would want to get your book, and not only can they download the Audible version at audible.com, but they can get the book, and they can even get an autographed copy of the book at where? Where's
the... I charge $25 for an autographed copy and $30 for a non-autographed copy. And incidentally, if I just may say one more thing, you know, I have a website called sonofharpospeaks.com, but I'm creating a foundation website. The Harpo, it's called Harpo's Place. It will be up by the end of this month. Harpo's Place, it's going to be a unique site just devoted to him as the complete human being, the family man, the artist, the things that people don't know about him. And I hope you'll tune into that, you know, in August or September and see what it's all about. I think you'll love it.
Well, I think all of our listeners, I think both of our listeners, will enjoy Son of Harpo Speaks. There's a whole lot more. It's 9 hours, folks. There's a lot more than we just got started. There's an amazing story of how Mr. Marx discovers his birth parents. It's an incredible story, and I hope people will check that out. But Bill Marx, thank you so much for being our guest on From the Bookshelf.
Gary, hope to do it again.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and join us again next week for another great show. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thank you so much, Breanne. And I want to thank Bill Marx, author of Son of Harpo Speaks, for being my guest this week. Check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. Thanks so much for listening. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.